You're listening to the Adventure RX podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Reichert. Guys, I want to just take a quick second to let you know that the audio that you're about to hear in this podcast is ripped from a series of five videos that I posted on our YouTube channel, which is also called Adventure RX. So I hope you enjoy this series and that you will subscribe and continue following along with the work that we're doing to empower life with type 1 diabetes, because adventure is great medicine. Hey guys, this is Steve from the Adventure RX, and this is episode 49, and today we are going to talk about how I handle low blood sugar and some strategies that I use to prevent and to treat low blood sugar, because I think in terms of all of the physical ramifications of type 1 diabetes, the fear of low blood sugar is probably the most present and the most clear and the most limiting for most people. And that's part of the reason why I went on a ketogenic diet in the first place. And so part of what I want to talk about is how treating a low blood sugar and having to eat carbohydrates, how that impacts the process of ketosis, and how that all factors in together. Before we start talking about treating low blood sugar, I think it's important to talk a little bit about prevention of low blood sugar. So there are a couple of different things that can contribute to going low. One of them is obviously insulin. And if you take too much insulin or if you don't eat enough food, these are all very basic things that we learn like when we were diagnosed. But what they don't necessarily always clarify is the fact that your sensitivity to insulin changes a lot. And so one day you can take the same amount of insulin, eat the same meal, and you're through the floor. The next day you do the same thing and you're through the roof. So it's important to understand that a lot of times low blood sugar is caused by, or at least significantly contributed to, by a mismatch with your basal insulin. A lot of times, if you're experiencing lows, the issue is just trimming basal back by a little bit, and then that regulates everything and makes everything else relate normally from that point forward. Learning how to adjust your basal insulin is something that you have to figure out how to do on your own, because it is a trial and error process. And like everything else that I advocate in terms of diabetes management, it should be gradually done and not combined with other new things or experiments. You don't combine experiments. You pick one thing and you do that and you get an answer before you move on to trying to answer the next question. Another contributing factor to low blood sugars that can be mitigated is the relationship or the timing between taking a bolus of rapid-acting insulin and being physically active. So one of the rules that I've always lived by ever since I discovered this right around the time that I was diagnosed was that I've always been on injections, so this may not be super useful to folks who are on a pump, but what I have found is that as long as I take my injection at such a point that it will be out of my system, that dose will have peaked by the time I'm starting my activity, then I'm at a much lower risk for having a emergency hypoglycemia event, as we clarified what that is earlier, right? I'm at much lower risk for having that than I would otherwise be. And so it's important to get your dose out of the way and let it peak before you go out. So for me, this means when I'm climbing, I have to get up earlier, and I hate getting up early, but I have the results and the blood sugar data to prove that it makes a big difference, that if I'm going to start hiking at 8, I need to make sure that I take my insulin not at 7 or 7:30, because then I'm going to be hiking at the time when my insulin is going to peak, and then I'm going to be at much greater risk for having to intervene more significantly and have a much more emergency situation develop. Rather, I want to make sure that it's at least 6 o'clock before I take my insulin, so that way it peaks right before I start hiking, and then what I'm left with as I'm doing that physical activity, I'm not left with the hard drop that would come. I'm actually left with the tail of the insulin as it kind of burns out. And I know that this is probably overly technical, But this is something that has proven invaluable to me when it comes to avoiding low blood sugars. It's learning how to use the tail of the insulin, dosing a small amount, but timing the peak away from the activity so that you get the tail of the rapid acting insulin. And sometimes that can really, really be useful. And it can also prevent unsafe situations where you're crashing hard. So when people ask me, well, how do you deal with low blood sugar when you're climbing and you're all the way up on a mountain? Well, the answer is simple. And that actually leads into the next point about prevention, is that it all has to do with regulating the insulin that I take. The first most basic thing that even people who are not on a keto diet can benefit from is regulating the timing of your insulin in conjunction to your physical activity. Okay, timing matters. And then the next thing is the quantity. And what led me to the ketogenic diet in the first place was the fact that it was enabling athletes to get more energy while using less insulin. And less insulin means less instability, less chaos. You need some insulin, but you want to keep it to a minimal amount, and then that way the fluctuations also are by extension going to be kept to a minimal amount. And that is one of the main benefits of the ketogenic diet, is that it is largely prophylactic in terms of preventative, as a preventative measure for avoiding low blood sugars. So when I used to eat a standard diet, I wouldn't say that I ate a terrible diet. I didn't eat a lot of junk food, but I ate bread and other processed foods. I would always have highs and then I would have lows. And that was a constant part of things. And as I said before, I never had an A1C over 6.7, but I was always having to chase highs and chase lows because of the fact that I was using a lot more insulin. The ketogenic diet enables you to use less insulin, and that right there makes you less susceptible to having low blood sugar episodes that require a massive intervention. So let's talk about treatments for low blood sugar. The goal with all of this stuff is to have less intervention necessary. So if I can take insulin, I can eat food, and then forget about it until the next meal and not have to mess with my diabetes in between, that's a big win. I don't make my diabetes go away, but I significantly limit how much I am negatively affected by it, and I'm able to go on and do my thing and live my life on my own terms as I want to, because I'm not having to always stop and check in, because I know that these are the points where I need to, you know, take an action, and then when I do that action, if I eat that food, my blood sugar will come up and it will not crash back down. Or if I take that little bit of insulin at this time, it will bring my sugar back down and it will not spike back up just at random. And this is the case, and this is one of the benefits with the ketogenic diet most of the time. I would say about 80 to 85% of the time, under what I would call normal circumstances. And normal is different for different people. For me, I have a normal that goes along with climbing, to where I can be out on a big day, and climb 1,000 feet and have normal blood sugars, and that is a normal scenario for me because of the fact that I have that dialed in through experience. So normal is all about what your experience is. When our blood sugar is low, we want to raise it through a method it's impossible to say this properly, okay? You want the least amount of intervention possible when your blood sugar is not, when it's not an emergency. So one of the things that I see, and I've done so many times, and I see other people doing this, and you want to reach out to people and say, hey, here's a different way that it might be helpful for you to do this, because a lot of times people react and they see 63 on their meter and they say, that's it, we're going to hell in a handcart, I'm going to eat everything in the pantry. When in reality, maybe all they needed was like a couple of pieces of dark chocolate and that would have brought them back up. Okay, I can't speak to everybody's situation, but I can say that for me, the first thing that I'm looking at when I have a low blood sugar is trying to analyze the context to figure out, is this blood sugar an emergency or is it casual? Can I treat it with the primary goal being to keep my blood sugar within range, or is the primary goal to not die? So once we've determined whether it's an emergency or whether it's a casual situation where we can just focus on controlling our blood sugar and not overcorrecting and be judicious in our response, there are two variables that we need to isolate, and that is the quantity of the treatment, how much, and the quality or the type of that treatment. So I think that's best to probably start with is to say, what is the type of thing that we're going to use to treat the blood sugar? Are we going to use fast sugars? Are we going to use slow sugars? And then from there to say, okay, how much should we use? And both of these variables can have an independent effect. I've had times where I've had less than 10 grams of carbs, but just because it's rapid acting carbs, it spikes my blood sugar and it makes everything go nuts. So for me on the keto diet, because of the fact that most of the lows that I encounter are not emergency lows, they are not the kind where I feel an imminent risk and jeopardy to my well-being, I will not use sugar, I will not use fast-acting treatments, and I will not use large quantities of the treatment that I select. So for me, in most cases, I find dark chocolate and ice cream, and these are both things that any CDE who's trained in standard diabetes education is going to say these are the worst possible things you could use because of the fact that they have so much fat. I'll use protein, things like almond butter as well, and generally in sparing proportions because much of the time when I have a low blood sugar, a little bit of protein with a little bit of sugar and fat, but slow sugars like you find in dark chocolate versus, you know, high concentrations like, you know, what you would have in, if you drank orange juice or apple juice or something like that. When you are treating every blood sugar like an emergency, there's almost no way to keep from spiking in response. And so all of that goes into determining how I treat a blood sugar on keto. Typically what I use, slower acting carbs and usually normal food. I don't typically use fast acting sugar because it's just too hard to control. And so I don't want to have that spike. The next thing is the quantity. In most cases, just a very little bit will do. And it involves being patient and playing a psychological game where you say, okay, I've had a little bit here and I'm going to make myself wait till this point before I have any more. I'm going to give it that turnaround time because the slower acting sugars do take a little bit longer to turn your blood sugar around, so you have to be patient with that, but also knowing that it's a non-emergency low blood sugar so that you can be patient and eventually it will come around. Usually takes 20 to 30 minutes for me where I start to see that incline where it ramps back up, but it does so much more gradually, and I don't feel like somebody just kicked me in the stomach because my blood sugar is going straight through the roof, which is what happens when I use sugar to treat a low blood sugar. Now, your mileage may vary. You may have a different way of doing this that gets you good results, and if so, that's awesome. I'm not trying to talk you out of that or say this is what you should do. I'm just saying that people ask me for my advice on low blood sugars with a keto diet. This is how I handle it. The other thing is the effect that low blood sugar treatments will have on ketosis. So it's kind of interesting that I have actually been experimenting with this situation because recently I recently went out of ketosis. Unbeknownst to me, because of the fact that I was eating a lot more protein than I was fat as I've been out on the road and as I've been traveling, and the fact that my carb intake was still so low, to me, I just assumed that meant that I was still in ketosis. I don't regularly test for ketones. I felt good, blood sugar was good, good energy, and I figured, okay, I'm fine. And of course, coming back here to the East Coast and having a little bit more time to sort of get granular with what I'm doing with my diet, and because I'm making these videos here, it seemed like a good idea to start eating more fat, and I noticed that pushed me back into ketosis, and so I actually have been going through the adaptation process again, and we'll hear more about that in tomorrow's video, what I'm drinking here and why I am drinking it. But the issue was that I had been out of ketosis for a long time, longer than I had any idea of. And so having to go back into ketosis requires a transition. It hasn't been as bad as the very first time that I did it, but it was significant enough to where I felt really poorly for the better part of the day. And so it was definitely a significant. The good news is that when you treat a low blood sugar, when they happen, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to go out of ketosis to the point where you have to go through adaptation to come back in. It doesn't completely derail and negate everything that you've done to get to that point. It kicks you out of ketosis for a time, 8 to 12 hours, and then a lot of times fasting is a good way to kind of reset if you've had to treat a low, and if you can avoid, eating the next morning, for example. Like, a lot of my lows happen at night. I'll just skip breakfast the next day. I'll eat something in the middle of the afternoon. I'll be back in ketosis and I'll be good to go, feeling great. And there's no penalty in terms of, having to readapt. Some people do report, when they eat a lot of carbs and they break their ketosis majorly, that it will impact them much more significantly. They'll have a really bad headache. They'll feel really crappy. That can happen. But under normal circumstances, as I see them, with the doses of insulin that I am taking on a ketogenic diet, there's no way that I would ever need to eat that much carbohydrate in order to get my blood sugars back up. So I'm not worried about treating a low and then, losing all the progress and having to readapt. That's not something that I think is as big of a risk as just eating too much protein and not enough fat. That, at least in my experience, has proven to be the bigger enemy of long-term maintenance of ketosis, much more so than treating a low blood sugar. And most of the time, if a low blood sugar happens, if you're aware of why it happened and you're able to make the adjustments necessary, they're isolated incidents. And if it's not an isolated incident, then you have a pretty good indication that you need to tune your basal insulin a little bit, dial that back by a couple of clicks, maybe one click at a time, just the smallest increment possible, until you get back to that point where you can take a unit of insulin and it's not dropping you like 75 or 100 points, because that's too sensitive. That's too much sensitivity to insulin. You don't want it that sensitive. So you want to dial your basal back to where you can take the normal dose that you eat with the normal meals that you eat and get the normal results that you would expect. And if you don't have a baseline established for what is normal, don't worry. It's trial and error. You're going to figure that out. And all of this stuff is off the table if it's an emergency. If it's an emergency, your goal is to not die, because you can always go back into ketosis. You can always readapt. You can always fix your blood sugar, all of that stuff. The idea is not to have a perfect blood sugar or have a perfect unbroken record of ketosis all the time, but rather the goal is to have a successful and worry-free life with your diabetes by manipulating the free and the accessible tools that we have, like our diet, like our lifestyle. And I think that the low-carb diet certainly is one way to do that, and a low-carb ketogenic diet is another extension of that pathway to make some of these advances into just a better quality of life.